So, David, I thought we would try something different today.
Okay, what's that?
I have a feeling that people would like to hear from more than ASN's regulatory and quality officer. Not that your role and your insights aren't important. Should I bring in our first guest?
Sure.
Okay, so our first guest joining us is Mark Lim. Mark is ASN's Vice President for Research, Discovery, and Innovation. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Todd. Hi, David.
So we thought we would ask you a question about KidneyX, specifically efforts to generate an appropriation for the initiative in fiscal year 2023. And just to remind our listeners that the federal fiscal year is October 1st through September 30th. So that would be, funding that would start in October. Mark, how's that effort going?
We're working closely with our policy team. I think there's a lot of things that we can do. I think the first couple of years of KidneyX was really trying to demonstrate that we can identify a need that innovators can solve. And that's really kind of our long-term efforts, to really just kind of redesign dialysis in a way that there's an artificial kidney. We're talking both potentially an implant or a wearable version for kidney treatment. In those first 2 to 3 years, I think we had learned how to bring in the community around a problem. I think we've also seen where some of them, the private capital has also aligned with us who we've identified, and they've in kind of increased our funding. And then we're also now really trying to engage the Kidney Health Initiative, which is another public-private partnership between ASN, of US FDA, and 100 different organizations to even provide more structure and kind of clarify that pathway for a lot of the innovators. Obviously for KidneyX, artificial kidney is a long-term commitment, and then we'll continue to kind of support the innovators in that space, so that they can bring their products closer and closer to the patient.
So, Mark, you focused on the artificial kidney. What else is KidneyX trying to address?
Yeah, so we'll obviously continue to focus on artificial kidney because we're still not there yet. But we've also identified a lot of areas where we could improve kidney care through different innovations. And those are areas that we're starting to look at, in terms of, with all the wealth of, for instance, social determinants of health data, can we actually use that to understand which types of data would actually be more predictive of kidney health and kidney outcome? And is that one way of kind of supplementing kind of traditional diagnostic data, so that we can readily identify, communities that have a higher prevalence than other communities, of kidney diseases? And that would really help inform, a lot of different efforts, to identify people who might not realize that they're at risk of kidney disease. And I think there's a lot of other similar innovations. I think when we look at kind of the whole, there's a lot of innovators looking at different types of kidney apps, mobile phone apps. I think there's a lot of innovators who have hammers and they're looking for that nail. And I think KidneyX can play a role in identifying that nail through our broad network, of kidney care specialists and patients, and then really steer those innovators so that they're, I guess, a little bit more precise in solving a problem. So I think that is an area that we are starting to work out in terms of really bridging the, I would say, the user community for these innovations and the innovators, in that space.
Todd, I'm sitting here listening to Mark and I'm just thinking about that request, both how it would go on Capitol Hill with appropriators and also how it goes with those people in the executive government branch of the government who have to make requests also for their budget. So once again, I'm kind of fascinated to think about how much our need for data on social determinants of health is really going to help drive where we focus in the future.
Yeah, and I'd be curious, David, just as you think about the appropriations process, can you kind of give us a high-level summary of what the year is going to look like, sort of what the next steps are, and sort of, you know, what we're pursuing?
Todd, and you and I have talked about this a lot, which is we have experience with what used to be the traditional method of making appropriations on Capitol Hill, and that's kind of gone a bit out the window, where you authorize something and then you went back to an appropriations piece. It's an election year, and it's going to be a very tense election year. There's no doubt about it. Whether or not we can get all of the appropriations bills done is very much probably in question. I think that, you know, ASN is going to still continue to work on that, but you're really looking at trying to get all of the appropriations ask in within the next couple of weeks. And then you're going to look at also trying to get those bills done before you go away for the August recess. Once you get back in September, as you know, in election year, it's just very hard to get a whole lot done. So we could be looking at more continuing resolutions, which are problematic because they don't like to add things that are not currently already in existence. But you know that pretty well yourself.
Yeah, I guess as we shift to our next guest, just to kind of summarize this discussion, you know, in addition to Mark's observations about sort of the present and future of KidneyX and its relationship with the Kidney Health Initiative, it seems like there's a couple of ways that appropriations may go for next year. You know, best case scenario, they're able to pass all the appropriations bills and Congress agrees to include $25 million for KidneyX. A more likely scenario is a series of continuing resolutions where they would just keep extending the current appropriation for KidneyX, which is $5 million a year. So I think in either of those scenarios, we'll be able to accomplish a lot of the goals that Mark outlined. You ready to meet our next guest?
Oh, I am. Absolutely. Thank you, Mark.
So our next guest is Susie Stark. Susie is ASN's Vice President for Excellence in Patient Care. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you, Todd. Hi, David.
Hi, Susie.
So, Susie, we have two new projects that I thought people would be interested in. The first is Project First Line, and the second is an immunization project. I'm just sort of curious if you could give us a quick overview of both of them.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Project First Line is a project that CDC developed. It is a national collaborative of pretty diverse healthcare and public health health partners. The project aims to provide an engaging and effective infection control training for millions of frontline healthcare workers in the United States. Those healthcare workers are in a variety of healthcare settings, hospitals, outpatient clinics, dialysis centers, nursing homes, in the case of ASN, dialysis facilities. We came to Project First Line through a partnership with the American Medical Association. So ASN is working with AMA to develop professional and patient level training for Project First Line. We have engaged several professional and patient subject matter experts and are doing four short education videos on key infection prevention topics. Those that the NCDC both feel are critical for patient care, especially for hemodialysis facilities across the United States. So those topics are hand hygiene, personal protective equipment, what PPE is worn in dialysis facilities and by whom and why, environmental disinfection, so that's surface contamination, and why that disinfection is necessary, especially between patients. And then injection safety. So why is infection prevention so important when injecting medications or normal saline during the dialysis process?
So Susie, just I want to make sure that I understand the structure here. So it sounds like CDC is working directly with the American Medical Association on this project, and then the AMA has selected medical specialty societies like ASN to be the experts and sort of the conveners and the communicators in various specialties. And for our case, we're focusing on the dialysis arena. I just want to make sure I have that correct.
Todd, that's correct. Let me restate it just to be sure that our audience understands, and that is AMA is working directly with CDC for frontline, for Project First Line. They did select, the American Medical Association did select the American Society of Nephrology for the dialysis-related Project First Line work at the request of the CDC. So we have, I don't believe that the AMA is working with other organizations. CDC certainly is, but AMA is working pretty exclusively with ASN for the work in Project First Line.
Susie, have there been any major changes in the reporting of infection rates in dialysis facilities in the last couple of years? We've had a lot of discussion about whether payment should be attached to infection rates and whether it should just be reported data. You work more with CDC than I do. Have you got any perspective on that?
David, it's interesting that the infection rates in dialysis facilities have actually gone down during the pandemic. It probably is fairly obvious the reasons why, in terms of all of those four areas that I talked about: hand hygiene, personal protective equipment, environmental disinfection, injection safety. All of those things have become kind of under the spotlight, if you will, during COVID-19. And dialysis facilities have done a good job in protecting dialysis patients and staff during COVID-19. And I think we're seeing the results in the fact that the infection rates have, in fact, gone down.
That's fantastic, Susie.
I agree.
So, Susie, we have another guest, and David doesn't know about this guest either. It's Colin Richardson. Colin, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
So Colin is ASN's Director of Grants and Contracts, and I know, Colin, you've been working closely with Susie on some of these projects. What if you gave us the quick overview of the immunization project?
So this is a grant that is funded by the CDC to the Council on Medical Specialty Societies, that is then sub-granting those funds to seven different medical specialty societies, of which ASN is one. ASN is going to be working to improve standard immunizations for adults in dialysis clinics over the course of 5 years. ASN will be working with its partners, with various health systems, to improve adult immunizations by working with ASN experts and nephrologists, and also sharing what we learn with other specialty societies and seeing what lessons are applicable across specialties.
So Susie, as I listen to that summary and I think about Project First Line, I'm just trying to connect the dots in terms of all these activities with CDC. Do you mind walking us through kind of the initial partnership between ASN and CDC, the Nephrologist Transforming Dialysis Safety, and how it's evolved then to include these other efforts?
Sure, Todd. So in 2016, ASN was awarded a contract by the CDC to really look at engaging nephrologists to address infection prevention in dialysis facilities across the United States. In that particular project, we looked at various avenues for reducing infections, like vascular access, like antibiotic stewardship, and various other kinds of methods of getting that information out into the public. We started webinar series and really tried to shine a light on infection prevention in dialysis. As we look at these kinds of methods, if you will, of helping to reduce infection rates in dialysis facilities, it's only natural to start thinking about the various ways that people contract infections. And so Project First Line is very direct in terms of training dialysis staff in the appropriate techniques of infection prevention. So those four areas that I mentioned earlier, hand hygiene, the appropriate use of personal protective equipment, appropriate disinfection of surfaces that surround patients and staff during the dialysis procedure, and then injection safety, all have very specific ways of preventing infections in dialysis facilities. The Adult Immunization Project really seeks to protect patients and staff by making sure that they are immunized against various diseases. So COVID-19, the flu, pneumonia, shingles, hepatitis B, those are things that have been where vaccines have been developed to actually protect patients so that against the spread of disease and protect other people from disease. So we are really excited to embark on this new journey with the Council for Medical Specialty Societies and CDC in looking to make sure that our patients and staff in dialysis facilities are immunized and protected against those diseases.
Todd, that is a lot. And that's something I think you and Susie can both be really proud of. And you've worked with CMSS for years. And I really do think that a lot of good comes through that program. And Susie, that is quite an evolution of work with CDC as well.
David, thank you. It has been the result of extraordinary efforts by nephrologist leaders, Alan Kleiger, who has led our Nephrologist Transforming Dialysis Safety and now is leading excellence in patient care, has just been an extraordinary leader for ASN and works well with the CDC. I'd also like to thank my team in terms of their dedication over the last 5.5 years to bring us to this point.
So maybe just is our last issue, and I agree, it's remarkable when you sort of think about the through line from the work with the CDC originally, the partnership with the AMA, now the broader sort of partnership with the Council of Medical Specialty Societies, but also just circling back to where we started in terms of the kidney community rallying around first the Kidney Health Initiative in 2012 and then KidneyX in 2018 and all the efforts there. I mean, it's just astounding how much progress is being made in the community. And then I don't want us to miss Mark's point about, you know, the new companies and the excitement around new therapies and innovative care models and everything that's happening. And maybe, David, that's where we should end, is I always like to give you the last word. So I know there's an issue related to the Medicare Advantage program and the Medicare ESRD program. Can you just give us the high-level summary of the issue there and sort of what you've been working on for the last couple of weeks?
Sure, Todd. I'll do this as briefly as I can so we don't get into the weeds too fast on this. Basically, you know, we've all dealt with Medicare for years and dealt with it as a fee-for-service system. And there's just not really a good way to go forward with fee-for-service forever. It's too expensive as a system. And so Medicare Advantage was created some years back to really allow private insurers to come into the Medicare market and to, you know, to do contracts with Medicare, to take on patients and to take on the cost of those patients as an accountable care organization, an ACO. And in that situation, you manage the patient's health and you reduce the usage of resources in the system. For example, reduce hospitalizations is a good example. And when you do that and you save money for the government, then that's where the for-profit companies that are private come into this. And that's what they're trying to do. That's where they are looking to do is keep people healthier. Healthier saves money. And that's how they make their money. Medicare Advantage did not start taking in patients with kidney failure as original entrance into the market until January 1, 2021. And that came about under the Cures Act. And so we basically knew that that was going to move fast. It has moved much faster than people would have ever thought. And so in a lot of ways, we're looking at a situation where we could have, in the next year or so, we could have 50% of all of the individuals with kidney failure in the United States on Medicare Advantage, as opposed to being just in traditional Medicare. And ASN supports that movement. As long as the guardrails are there and as long as the things that we've put in place and dealt with in traditional Medicare are in some ways replicated, maybe not the exact letter to law, the way it would be in Medicare traditionally, but in Medicare Advantage. So, for example, so far the data from the claims for Medicare Advantage has not been available for US RDS to use, and that's an important database for us to use in nephrology. And then there's other things to that too. So, for example, as we prepare to make recommendations on Medicare Advantage, we're also looking at things like taking the metrics and the efforts in the voluntary model, the Kidney Care Choices model, which are really designed to go upstream and slow the progression of CKD and increase the opportunity for patients to either slow their progression or else get a transplant. Now we're looking at trying to do similar things within Medicare Advantage. And we have actually put together a set of recommendations for the government to consider adding stages 3, 4, and 5 non-dependent kidney disease patients into the ESRD chronic special needs plan within Medicare Advantage. And that could be a big stepping stone for increased efforts to slow progression within Medicare Advantage and across the spectrum. So that's probably more than you wanted, but that's kind of it in a nutshell. So that's what we're working on. We want to make sure the data stays good. We want to make sure that the really innovative approaches to slowing kidney disease progression and getting us to transplant are also covered in Medicare Advantage so that we don't lose the progress that we've been making in traditional Medicare.
David, thank you. That was a really helpful summary. I have a question that's kind of a macro policy question. What's your impression of as health insurers use Medicare Advantage to cover people with kidney failure? What's your sense as to how that may change the perception, their perception, the insurer's perception of the population of the 37 million Americans with kidney disease, particularly those with kidney failure?
Well, I think to put it overly simply, and I'm going to be a little bit oversimplify this, which is basically those are for-profit companies. And for-profit companies are in the business of making a profit. And one of the things that has been a problem for us for almost 5 decades now is that we created a payment system within Medicare that waited for you to progress all the way to kidney failure before it really kicked in and where the real money was being placed in the system. And what I'm hoping for and looking for, and I think that we see the trend of this as we see new companies emerging and new insurers becoming involved, is they're looking at this. And I think we could be in a very good position to really see those entities start to really drill down on how to keep those patients healthier, longer, and less costly. And that all the way around improves things for the patients that our members take care of. And so it's just by their nature not to want to put all of their resources at the end of this stage and try to figure out what would be the best way to get these patients either to slow down their progression or, when it happens, get them into transplant and, you know, alleviate the poor outcomes and the cost.
Well, thanks, David. We'll save a discussion on transplant policy because there's a lot happening there as well for a future podcast. But I really appreciate your taking the time today. And also thank you, Mark, Colin, and Susie. I really enjoyed the discussion.